time. What am I? Who am I? What will I be? Where am I going? And what will I see? Searching my mind for some truths to reveal. What thoughts are fantasy? What memories real?
Welcome to Pod Stallions. I'm Brian, and with me as always is Jason.
Hello, everybody.
And today's episode, we're going to talk about the science fiction worlds of Glenn Larson, specifically Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers. Now, I know we touched on that in episode 7. However, we were doing more of a larger topic show, and we only gave these two series about 10 minutes each. And with the news of this third reboot of Battlestar Galactica for the big screen, we thought, what better time to go back to those galaxies, if you will, and talk about those shows again. And there's definitely a lot more to be mined from that discussion.
Well, I think it's in our wheelhouse for the time frame, the stuff that we kind of cover, you know, the 70s, our childhoods, you know, science fiction, et cetera, but also the merchandise. I think when you look back, you realize there was just, in ways that current stuff doesn't get covered, there was such a wealth of merchandise that came out for both of these properties in many, many categories, a lot of which, you know, Brian covers. I'm talking as if you're not here. A lot of which you cover on your...
I like to refer to myself in the third person, so it works well.
Mr. Brian covers with Plaid Stallions and the Rack Toys and coloring book articles on there. So we thought this would be a good time to hit all this stuff. We could have done the entire oeuvre of Glenn Larson, but that would have started with Alias Smith and Jones.
Oh, right, my stars. I don't even know. We could go to The Highwayman, which I'm very fond of.
Sam Jones.
And Jocko.
Glenn Larson was... wasn't he? I think he was a musician as well. Like, he started writing songs, I think. He wrote a couple of semi hits in the Beach Boys kind of vein, I think.
I think you're right.
I don't know when he got into television, but one of the things he's kind of been known for, I think he gets kind of a bad rap. There's a lot of love for him, obviously, as an executive producer, but I think he gets kind of a bad rap where if you laid out his properties from end to end, you'd kind of think they're mostly, you know, cheesy.
Not Quincy.
Not Quincy, that's true. Yeah. Or that they were all a riff / ripoff of things that already existed. Alias Smith and Jones was riffing on Butch and Sundance. Battlestar Galactica was riffing on lots of mythology, but of course it was riding the wave of Star Wars.
Actually, Quincy is largely believed to be a knockoff of a groundbreaking Canadian TV show called Wojak, which starred...
Really?
Yeah, which starred... Now what's his name? He was an American star too, but he's a Canadian. What was his name? The Canadian actor...
Was it Alan Thicke?
John Vernon. You know Dean Wormer?
John Vernon. He was also the voice of Iron Man.
That's right.
Iron Man.
Well, most all those people were CBC radio performers.
You know what else he was? He was one of the... Did you ever see... come on, Jason. Come on.
Animal House? Yes.
The movie called Animal House? It's this strange comedy. No.
Lee Marvin. Comedy?
Point Blank. You ever see the Lee Marvin movie Point Blank?
Yeah. Isn't that the... It got remade at Payback?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Which Payback is a pretty good It's a pretty good movie. I'm not a Gibson fan much, but it's a pretty damn good movie. It's very, very dark, but Point Blank is really badass. And Lee Marvin is – there's a scene where Lee Marvin gets slapped by Angie Dickinson for about a minute and a half. He just stands there and she just slaps him so much that she gets exhausted from slapping him, and he just stands there and takes it. It's amazing. But Vernon's one of the bad guys in that. But anyway, go ahead. Continue, please.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there is a lot of argument that Larson's been derivative, but you know, what he obviously knew how to sell a program and make something that worked, because his legacy on television it speaks for itself.
Absolutely, and it's hard to talk about the shows we're about to talk about without talking about Star Wars or Star Wars as a launching off point. I mean, so we talked about this before. We've talked about it in our Star Wars episode, which we're going to do a part two someday. But, you know, some of us can divvy up our lives into the, you know, pre-Star Wars and post-Star Wars, how everything changed. And, of course, with these two properties, there were two of the things we were hungry for. You know, there were only a handful of networks and properties, either, you know, movie or TV, that might have been in the sci-fi fantasy vein, and we lapped it all up because we wanted something to be the next Star Wars.
Yeah, but, and I think a lot of projects got greenlit on the idea that sci-fi is a license to print money.
Yes, absolutely.
And because – and this ties into the merchandising idea. I think because Kenner locked that down and got almost – every penny out of Star Wars. I mean, they were making coloring books. They were not letting anything go in their master license.
Right.
When these guys would march in with Battlestar Galactica and Buck Rogers, you know, I gotta think the discussion went, oh, space is hot. You gotta have space. Because they didn't leave a stone unturned. I mean, you can find almost anything with that stupid Buck Rogers poster on it.
Yeah, and it's incredible because
it's a beautiful poster, but I'm just saying
that it is. It's better. It's one of the one sheets. There's a handful of one sheets out there that are better than the films by a long shot, and it is a great one sheet. It manages to make the spandex white uniforms look cool, which they never did in the show. But well, let's go back for a second then. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like you knew the name Buck Rogers before Star Wars, or did that not even get onto your radar until after Star Wars?
Well, you know, we had a thing here on TV Ontario I've mentioned before called Magic Shadows that was basically a film historian, Elwie Yost, who used to play old serials. So I was watching old serials like Captain America when I was like 5. So I think I'd seen the Buster Crab, Flash Gordon, and Buck Rogers by the time I can't remember. It's a chicken or egg thing, but I definitely had seen them as a child, and I was mildly aware of the character. But he certainly didn't have any sort of presence in my life prior to the television series.
No, and I bring it up, and I know Battlestar comes first, but I bring it up only because of Star Wars. You know, and just, I mean, that was my life. I mean, like most kids back then, or near our age or whatever, it really consumed us. I mean, it became, we just ate, slept, and drank it. It was one of those things that I don't know what to compare it to, because so much these days is so fleeting. You know, it's in the zeitgeist, you know, for a couple of months, and then you're on to something else. I mean, Star Wars truly permeated every facet of pop culture, and it wasn't just a kid thing. I mean, the world was into it, and the world was riffing on it and joking about it, putting it in sketches, you know, making it, putting
Donnie
it in
and Marie show and
Donnie
yeah.
and Marie show, you know, Saturday Night Live, you name it. It was such a huge part of our lives that my dad, along with I'm sure millions of dads, did that thing where it was like, well, if you like this, I had something back when I was a kid called, you know, Commander Cody and the Space Rangers or whatever. And so he would, you know, he would get me into things that he knew as a kid, you know, Terry and the Pirates, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. And he found me this huge hardcover book that I have somewhere. It's huge. I mean, it's like a big, you know, big long hardcover book that reprinted the earliest strips of Buck Rogers from the 30s. I think this thing was printed in like the mid 70s, and it had a really nice jacket that came with it. But the introduction was by Harlan Ellison. Was it Harlan Ellison or Ray Bradbury did the introduction? I could find this thing on eBay, I'm sure. And what was really cool about it was in the back, there were three or four black and white pages of photographs of Buck Rogers merchandise from the 30s. Everything from, you know, like a Red Ryder, you know, wagon that looks like a rocket ship, to space helmets, to the amazing Buck Rogers disintegrator pistol and holster that I would stare at these pictures and just obsess over trying to get this stuff. So not long after Star Wars, I started to understand who Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon were because of reprints that my dad had picked up for me. And, you know, I didn't look at them with jaded eyes as a 7 or 8 year old and go, you know, this is really cheesy or look at that artwork or whatever. I ate it up because it was something new and different. And I don't remember the first time that I sort of heard about Battlestar Galactica. It must have been TV previews, you know, must have been, it was ABC, wasn't it? It must have been TV previews. But that thing, I think it aired on a Sunday night, and you can look this up, listeners. Again, we do this off the cuff. I tend to not look stuff up on the internet while we're doing this because I can't chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm shopping eBay.
But that pilot, which was, I think, 3 hours. I think it was a three-hour telefilm. When that thing aired, I believe there were 62 million people tuned into that.
It was huge. I don't know if I correctly or incorrectly remember this, but I swear it aired on Thanksgiving weekend here.
Oh, okay.
But you know, so I watched a lot of it, but I missed the start.
Let's remind listeners that your Thanksgiving weekend.
Oh, it's in October. Yeah,
it's in October, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
because we invented it.
Because you invented it. You invented yes. Native Americans.
Yes.
So yours is in October. So
Native
I'm guessing
Canadians.
I think it aired in September or October, I think, in the U.S. And you know what's really cool? We could find these and post them. I'm not sure if I remember this from the TV Guide back then or if I discovered it sooner. But the initial ads in the TV Guide, the artwork in those ads and subsequent episodes, like two-hour, you know, Battlestar season ender or whatever – were drawn by, I think, Frazetta. I think Frank Frazetta did a lot of the artwork.
I think he did the pre. Yeah, there was. Was it the same? Was it Macquarie who did the original?
Well, Macquarie, yeah, I've actually got a portfolio that Universal were nice enough to send me. They finally did a Macquarie portfolio for Battlestar because those Frazetta ones are mind blowing. They look nothing like what ended up in the show. You couldn't help be disappointed if you saw the ad and then watched the show. But it's one of these shows that I have a real affection for because for many, many years, it was written off as cheesy and a Star Wars ripoff and everything else. It started to kind of turn the tide a little bit before it got reinvented by Ron Moore for Sci-Fi Channel. But once it did, people started to go back and kind of reevaluate the initial series. And for those of you that, you know, I'm sure you know about this.
I did that.
But it's you know, the gist of it was, I don't even know what planet they're supposed to be from or whatever, but basically they've been at war with the Cylons for 100 years but they've been quiet or something. And there's going to be this peace treaty and the Cylons are like these cybernetic, you know, type creature things. I don't know if there's lizards inside of them or what it is. But just as peace is about to break out, there is a conspiracy or something goes wrong. And the planet is attacked. And these battle stars, which are like, you know, they were like military, you know, aircraft carrier kind of things in space, all get destroyed except for the Galactica and a handful of ships that make it out. And then the Galactica is on the run from the bad guys. And that's kind of the gist of the show. But it ties in, you know, Egyptian history, mythology. Glenn Larson is a Mormon. So a lot of Mormon, stories and mythology is tied in there. And you had, you know, Colonel Adama was sort of the Ben Kenobi, you know, sort of leaderish, you know, older fella. And it was...
well, it was originally supposed to be called Adama's Ark.
Was it?
Yeah, that was one of the concept names of it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and...
He was, he was played by Gene Hackman. No, what am I thinking of? He was played by Bonanza. Why can't I think of his
Lorne
name?
Lorne Greene.
Lorne Greene.
Yeah, good Canadian.
Who said was a beloved TV star, because Bonanza was on for like 63 years.
Yes, it was, actually.
By the time Battlestar aired. So he was a big get for that show, because he was, you know, he was a very, very well-known actor. And then you had virtual semi-unknowns. They had done lots of TV work, and Richard Hatch was on Streets of San Francisco and stuff like that. Richard Hatch as Apollo, Dirk Benedict as Starbuck. You know, Apollo was kind of the straight-laced, more Luke kind of character, but the leader. Starbuck was definitely the Han Solo. And you had What's-Her-Name and What's-Her-Face as Cassiopeia and Athena. Maren Jensen played Athena, who has literally fallen off the planet. What's-Her-Name as Cassiopeia shows up and stuff. And then you had like a, you know, robot dog, and you had a kid, and Jane Seymour, and all kinds of great stuff. But it's actually a really good show. When it's bad, you know, when it doesn't work.
Oh boy.
It doesn't work well at all. But in its defense, part of the problem was from the beginning, the network didn't know what they wanted as far as a commitment went. And this was an incredibly expensive show. It was like $1 million an episode in 1978, which is extraordinary. They had John Dykstra, hot off of Star Wars, coming and basically doing feature film effects work for a television series. So it was twice as difficult, not only because of the budget, but because you were taking widescreen effects and squishing them down to a television.
Yeah, in fact, you can watch some episodes and you'll see clips that are from Silent Running.
Yes. Oh, and then they would recycle clips up the yin yang. You know, jettisoning. But and then the design work, as we said, was Ralph McQuarrie and some other well-known McQuarrie, hot off of Star Wars. So a lot of money and effort was put into this by Universal. And initially there was a lawsuit coming from Lucas that said this is too similar to what we did with Star Wars. I don't know. I thought it was so unfounded. But they kind of threw it out and nothing happened with it. But,
actually, no, that's not true. One of the things that got cut from that was, as I recall, you remember like in Battlestar Galactica, all of a sudden when Starbuck would shoot his laser, it would just be like a flashlight and an explosion. There would no beam.
Yeah.
And you'd go, what are they, cheaping out? That was one of the things in the lawsuit that Lucas won on, I guess, is that they couldn't do that every week. And that's what I've heard.
I thought it was just sort of turned off, but or thrown out. But so you had all this amazing pedigree for the show, and the problem with it was doing so well. I mean, people think it was like a failure because they did one season of it essentially, but the problem with it was so incredibly expensive. It was always in the top 20. I think it did very well ratings wise, but it was just too expensive to continue. And the reason that the certain episodes are just ripoffs of, you know, Towering Inferno or Magnificent Seven or whatever, is because they were running out of time. Like they suddenly had to write double the episodes they initially thought. And if you look at like the outtakes, if you find the outtakes on you know YouTube or something, it's, I mean, just the takes that there's no downtime between the takes. I mean, just there's clips of Apollo and Starbuck in a cockpit. You know, well, look over there, Apollo. Look over there. And it's like, okay, do it again. Oh, look over there. I mean, like there's no cushion between takes. They were going so fast trying to get so much done while some of the writers were like writing, you know, pages in the hallways and stuff. But I think it, you know, a lot of it, a good 60-70% of it holds up very, very well. The mythology, I mean, a lot of stuff was brought right into the reboot, right from the original.
Series. It was surprising how much they added, because I was never a fan of the show, by the way. I had some of the toys. I just kind of, my friends went and saw the movie in the theater because we're Canadian, but I missed that. And then I never caught the whole movie. So
I saw, because the movie was basically the pilot, the 2 hours of the pilot as feature, and it was in Sensaround.
Yeah, I don't remember because I never saw it. I don't know if the Canadian release was in Sensaround. We got it before it went to television for some reason.
Okay, that makes sense because that's probably the same thing that they did overseas with Buck Rogers. I think the same thing happened. They kind of tied that in. I think it was sort of a deal where it was like, okay, well, this has to be released in the theaters first before it goes to television. So, but along with that, so you've got – see, that's the thing that's weird about Battlestar. People think about it and they want to bag on it. It's like this was a huge investment by Universal. They tied it into the theme park. They had – buckets of merchandise come out for this thing, and they were definitely setting up a mythology, or Larson was, to bring this, you know, to have this be a long running story. Because, you know, spoiler alert, the end, you know, end cap on each episode, you know, Lauren Green talks about how they're going to keep searching for this planet called Earth that they may have come from or something. So there's a nice mystery in there too. The design work I think is fantastic. The ships, even the costumes, they're not dated, you know. It's right in that pocket that, just like the first Star Wars, if you go back to that first Star Wars, and I always point this out to people, the cantina sequence. Mm-hmm. This was the height of disco. This was the height of you know, synthesizers and disco and, you know, people talking like robots or whatever the hell it was. So you look at that cantina thing, it's like where the genius idea was to have the band play something that sounds like almost like Benny Goodman, you know, and not have it seem ridiculous. And that's one of the reasons I think those movies hold up so well, is they're not dated in that way that they kind of feel timeless, because, you know, we've talked about this, I think, on the show too, like within a couple of years, you have things in the Buck Rogers show that are so of their time. They don't make sense for the time that the show takes place in, but it makes sense in the time of the show when it was produced.
Yeah, Buck Rogers, I think, was dated the minute
it dates came it out. In a way that I don't think Battlestar was. Battlestar was, you know, orchestral. I mean, I can't think of a lot of, you know.
The Supremes there are a bit dated.
You mean the chicks with the three mouths?
Yeah, I always hated that, dude.
It's still creepy. We made the action figure, and even the action figure's creepy. I mean, the dog is a little dated. You know, and some of the kind of music when the dog does something dumb, you know, the clown music and shit. Yeah, some of that is. But for the most part, it holds up very well. The even the haircuts don't look incredibly dated. The costumes are great. And the music is great. It's got one of the best theme tunes, which I think is co-written by Larson. But that opening theme is spectacular.
It's got some beautiful effects. You're right. Like there's some very iconic designs in there. Even though I'm not the world's biggest fan, I have the Hot Wheels Viper and Cylon Raider on my desk here because they're cool, you know?
Yes. Now, let's get to the merchandise because – so you weren't really watching it much when it was on.
No, I did end up begging my folks for the action figures because I was just such a Star Wars kid and mm-hmm. I liked science fiction, so it made sense. I ended up regretting it because when the Buck Rogers action figures rolled out a year later, my parents were like, "You already have enough stuff. You already have enough. You're not getting into another line." And it was actually Buck Rogers is something I watched weekly and enjoyed, and I loved those figures. And I was stuck with Imperious Leader and Ovion, who I didn't even know who they were. And you know, I really regretted that whole decision to get into the Battlestar stuff.
If only they knew the damage they did by saying, "That's the last toy line you're ever going to collect."
Oh, like, you know what? So many good intentions, but yeah.
30 years later.
And unplugging the TV every summer never had any effect on me whatsoever.
Well, it's funny because I got the Mattel stuff too. Like I requested it for birthdays and Christmases and stuff. Mattel did this really smart thing, or maybe not, depending on your opinion. But they did a nice line of action figures, which I always thought was the humans were a little creepy because they didn't have pupils, but they made Starbuck and Adama and didn't make Apollo. And I interviewed him once. I interviewed Richard Hatch once a couple of years ago at a convention and asked him that question. And he claims he said no back in the day, that they wanted his likeness to make merchandise and toys, and he said no. And that's what he claims is the gospel about that. So none of the women were made. Boxy, the kid, wasn't made, but the Daggett was. The Ovion, Cylons, which were cool. There was a mail-away gold Cylon, you know, leader.
I remember that comic ad.
Yeah, you had mail-away for him. There was Bore, the pig-face guy. There was Baltar was made. But then rather than make ships that the figures could fit into, which would have been, you know, pretty substantial, like the Star Wars.
Well, you know what? They could have probably done a fudging of the scale.
Yeah, they could have. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I think I would have preferred that to what we got. Even though I think those ships are neat, and I've got a couple of them now. And Canada got that exclusive Land Rover.
Yeah, well, I want to get to that, because didn't Canada get – I think they got a couple of things that were – but so what Mattel did was, rather than do to scale with the figures, they did this smaller scale where the little figures that would come inside with the ship of Colonial Warriors and Cylons were about an inch tall and articulated. And then the ships, were very close to the designs from the series, and they shot – this is a – controversial, you know, time when everything was shooting little plastic red missiles, and the first batch of Mattel Battlestar stuff had missiles that shot out across the room, and then there was a horrible tragedy, and then they made them so they didn't shoot out of the ship. They just kind of popped out half an inch, and you popped them back in. But they did, you know, model kits. There were also 12-inch figures. I got the 12-inch Cylon for Christmas, which was, you know, it's, you know, kind of crappy when you look at it now, but at the time, it, you know, you press the backpack down and the chest and the gun lit up and the visor, you could move the little lever in the back of his head to make the light go back and forth. I mean, the Cylons are a great design. They're a little derivative of Vader, but they're a great design, and the voice is fantastic and all that. And then they made a Colonial Warrior, which confused the hell out of me.
Yeah, as a kid, I remember not liking those as a kid. And, you know, first of all, the Colonial Warrior looks like it's supposed to be kind of like Lauren Green, but not really. And then, you know, years later, if you're a toy collector, you figure out that Mattel's a notorious recycler of things.
Right.
And over the years, you know, I found out that the weird computer they put in the Space 1999 playset was a major Matt Mason piece, and you know, this guy was Big Jim, and a lot of the He-Man characters are very derivative of some Big Jim characters. But
where did the 12-inch figures come from?
They're Captain Laser.
Captain
Laser. From Major Matt Mason.
Now, is that his birth name?
He was born with that name, so therefore he picked up a laser, you know. Gotcha. Damn you, Mom and Dad.
He was kind of destined to get involved with lasers in some way.
Yeah, right? And laser surgery wasn't an option, so he...
Right.
And I'm not sure exactly who he fought, and it's he's a weird toy in that Major Matt Mason is a 5-inch figure.
And
he's a little rubber bendy.
Yeah.
And Captain Laser is a foot tall, and it's just like, figure it out, kids.
You know? Yeah, that's right. So he was a total recycle from a couple years before. Like I said, there were model kits. I remember getting – I got the Colonial Viper, and I got another ship that was similar. But when I asked for the – and this is – God bless my mother. I always talk about her. She'd just get it right there in the gift department. Like, she'd almost get it right, and then just – she took a left turn when she – you know, she got the Luke Skywalker, the Stormtrooper rifle instead of the Han Solo. I mean, I loved everything. Don't get me wrong. I didn't complain. But she just kind of – and she went to get the Cylon Raider, and she got like the MPC or the Revell model kit of the Cylon Raider, which was a pretty complex model kit if you're 8 years old, like trying to put that thing together. So I'm not sure I ever actually put that together. But I got a fair amount of merchandise. I got the coloring books. There were coloring/activity books. And I dove into those religiously. I mean, I was hooked on this show. I think it aired I know that I think the pilot aired on a Sunday, and I think the show aired every Sunday night. And I just
Sunday nights.
Yeah. I was obsessed with this show.
My sister's boyfriend was really obsessed with Battlestar Galactica. I remember that he was going on and on about the Caprica, or not the what's the. You can tell I'm a huge fan. he was going on and on about the episodes with I think Lloyd Bridges.
Oh, the oh yeah, he was Colonel blah blah blah.
Yeah.
He was of the ship the Star Chaser.
The Star Pusher, yeah.
Star Punisher.
Wow. Now, there's somebody screaming at us right now.
Yeah, exactly. They're going, "No, you got it wrong."
Yeah.
He was great in it. And you know what's funny? Oh, the Pegasus? Was it the Pegasus?
I don't know.
Well, what's funny is they brought his character or a riff on his character into the reboot.
I know. My wife was all over that reboot.
Right? Didn't they make him a woman?
Yeah, they did that. And just if I can surmise this, the remake happened, people, and I know you're not happy about it, but I'm really tired of I have to read it all the time online. Somebody just has to. Somebody's still mad about Starbuck being a girl. you know what? I'll say this. There's nothing that I love that if somebody I don't like touches it, that I get upset about because I still have the original.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. Now look, I will freely admit, and to this day, I'm irritated by this that they didn't. They could have done everything they did with the show that they did, which was a great, for a time, was the best thing on television. It was not perfect, and it certainly didn't wrap up perfectly, but for a time there, it was the best written show on television for a brief while, and it had a huge following, obviously put Sci-Fi Channel on the map. They did a brilliant thing where they were, and people forget this too, as much as they go on about, they got to say frack all the time, in the reboot, like that, they got past the censors and got to use that word. Well, you know what? They did it first in the 78 series. Like they very blatantly did it in the original show, and nobody seemed to bat an eyelid. But what they should have done, and it still could have been the same show. And according to Dirk Benedict, who's a dear friend of mine.
Christmas letter.
I've met him a couple of times. We had him at the booth, the Entertainment Earth booth, a couple years ago for our Battlestar stuff, and I met him before that. And we talk. And he's a talker. You ask him what time it is, he'll tell you how to make a watch. He knows how to talk. He says their bags were almost packed. Like they were about to be in that new series, and then it didn't happen. And I think that was a mistake. I think they should have bridged. They could have still kept it the same show and kept about 80% of it the same, but they should have brought in the older characters to keep them within the mythology. I think it would have been smart.
Well, they did bring in Richard Hatch.
They did bring in Richard Hatch as a completely different character, but they could have brought both of them in as the elder guys, and they could have really made a badass. They could have made those characters and those bits badass in a way that it couldn't have been back in 78. And it would have been cool for the fans. It would have been cool for them because the show kind of got screwed. I mean, it should have run for years. And we all know what happened. And it wasn't because of ratings. It got shot down because it was so expensive to produce. But they wanted to keep it going. And so they did something called Galactica 1980. Which is one of the most notoriously
good shows ever made.
So Galactica 1980 is basically ABC saying, we think there's some ratings here, but we need to produce this show. If anything will defend what I just said about the show being so expensive, too expensive to keep on the air, Galactica 1980 is your proof. They wanted to keep it going. They wanted to keep the title going in some way, but reducing it from $1 million an episode to about $1,500 an episode, using a couple of sets and then keeping it all earthbound. And that show was basically
all LA bound.
I think the only thing that remained, not only did the whole mystery of finding the Earth get shot in the foot because they find it in 5 minutes. The only thing I think that remains from the original, is Lorne Greene. Did Commander Ty make it? Did he make it through?
I can't remember.
Or Boomer, maybe?
Maybe.
But they dropped the entire rest of the cast got dropped. New characters, new actors.
Well, Boxy was now all grown up.
Oh right, Boxy was all grown up.
And was he Kent McCord or was that Barry Van Dyke? And Barry Van Dyke, sign of quality.
I think it's Barry Van Dyke. And so the only thing the only thing I can say good about Galactica 1980 is the Wolfman Jack episode, the Halloween episode, and the fact that the last episode they brought Dirk Benedict back.
Here's a confession. I never missed an episode of Galactica 1980 as a kid. I far preferred it to Battlestar Galactica. This is not the case now. And
wow.
I think it was about 2 years ago. I hadn't watched Galactica 1980 in years. And
okay.
I popped on that Wolfman Jack episode, and I was maybe 20 minutes into it. And, you know, they were building some suspense, and it was kind of interesting. And I texted you, you know, this Galactica 80, it's not as bad as I remembered it. And you went, you started saying, but really? Really? Have you been to the microwave part of it yet? And the meatballs? And then it just went down shithill. Like, it was just so William Daniels. And were they talking about meatballs?
Well, it was William Daniels and his fans. And the other guy was like, the other guy was one of those guys that showed up in every 70s sitcom ever made. You know the guy, he's got kind of a Brooklyn accent and his hair is kind of slicked to the side and he was in everything. And he brought his famous, you know, spicy meatballs to this Halloween party. Everyone's dressed up. Wolfman Jack is in it. I forget what he's dressed up as, but a Cylon shows up.
Yeah.
And of course everyone thinks it's the best costume at the party. No one knows it's a friggin', you know, Cylon. It's like, when, boy, talk about pissing on your original concept. If you've taken this iconic, you know, cool bad guy and already made him into a farce, into a joke in 5 minutes, it was bad. So that kind of ruined my dreams for Battlestar. I mean, I thought that at some point they were going to bring it back. I didn't understand the politics of television then and how it all went, but that was the death knell. But so let's talk real quickly before we get to Buck Rogers, because we got to get to this. Let's talk real quick about, wasn't there a plethora of rack toys as well for Battlestar?
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about is, and I've actually gone through all of them and working on the book and researching. Like a lot of, you know, rack toys fall into like two categories. Sometimes they're incredibly show accurate, like some of the AHI Star Trek stuff, the nice phasers they did. And then other times it's basically, let's make a nice card back, let's make some stickers, and let's put Battlestar Galactica on every piece of crap we make.
Yeah,
so that's what happened here.
Didn't they do like a medical kit and like Land Rovers and things like that?
I'm honestly surprised that there isn't like a Battlestar Galactica grocery set and you know, because they took some appropriate, like they have an LEM lander that they probably used.
That's it.
The company's name is Laramie, by the way.
Laramie, yeah.
And I can honestly remember they even TV advertised their Space Glow putty.
You know what? Don't even move. Battlestar Galactica, Space Glow putty.
Yeah, I can't remember my PIN number, but I could do that with you, yes.
I remember, and I bet you I haven't seen that commercial in over 30 years, and it's still stuck in my head, that one and the one. I mean, I haven't seen this in 30 years, but it's so ingrained. This to tell you how many times commercials ran back then.
Yeah,
you would see it over and over. It's the Incredible Hulk. Hang on. The Incredible Hulk with a face that's mean, big strong muscles and skin that's green. Superhero Hulk.
That's Mego.
Isn't that a Mego ad?
Yep, it is.
That's never left my brain.
And it never will.
Just think of the shit that I should know, the important shit that's happened throughout history that there's no room for, because the little alcove that song is in has pushed the important shit out.
Yep. And on your deathbed, they'll be like, he's trying to say something. And then, you know, your grandchildren or great-grandchildren will be like, what the frick is Battlestar Galactica Space Glow Putty?
That's right. Just imagine how disappointed everyone will be.
Yeah. The Laramie stuff, the one that makes me laugh is Battlestar Galactica jets. And they are just, you know, your cheesy little plastic jets you get at a dollar store. And they have the word Battlestar Galactica written on them. Like,
but I would have grabbed them. I mean, I know that I grabbed some of the Rack Toy stuff. Like I said, I had the coloring books. There was there were a couple of things that I always wanted that I forgot about until I saw them again on your site. Uh-huh. And they you know, I'm going to digress here for a second. You know, when we got the Doctor Who license, one of the things that I kept saying, because this happened with the TARDIS and Doctor Who in a way that had never really happened before, where the TARDIS became so iconic that it became more iconic than the character in many ways. Like it's been around forever, but I mean, I never knew it in the pop culture, you know, atmosphere to ever be as iconic as the Enterprise or an X-Wing or whatever. And it's become that. It really has, which is so strange. It just makes, when you think about the whole thing, even 10 times more bizarre, because it's such a strange thing that it's just a box and we all know what it is. But I kept saying, whatever we can do with this design, let's do it, because whether it's a cookie jar or a mug or whatever, there's something very iconic about this that people are responding to. Same thing with the Cylon, the design of that Cylon, and they utilized it in many ways. Like they did a calculator.
The radio head.
The radio head is brilliant.
Yeah.
That is an amazing piece of merchandise.
And they had an inflatable chair. I think some of those merchandise pieces are funny because the Cylons are bloodthirsty killers.
Yes.
And they have like pictures of, you know, like the walkie talkies, and it's like a little kid's talking to a Cylon, you know,
yeah,
like
walkie talkies.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, and the Cylon looks kind of pleased on the lunchbox, and there's some really weird stuff out there.
Well, and I think the Cylons, I think they have a creature inside them or something.
I think that was one of the things that I didn't like as a kid. I didn't understand what they were and who the Imperius leader was. And I think that made me angry that it wasn't completely spelled out for me.
I thought the Imperius leader was what they looked like outside of their shells or something.
Yeah, I think I missed those ones, and then I just was confused. And
so we're all, I mean, we're getting some of this stuff. We're getting the Rack Toys. I'm watching the show. You're watching Galactica 80. But I don't know when 80 started to air. But did it actually air after
mid-season replacement?
After Buck Rogers, because Battlestar probably ran it once and then ran it a second time in repeats. So that when 80 did kind of happen, it was a little more fresh. But so we know for certain that Buck Rogers was in between there. So,
well, Buck Rogers premiered in the fall of 1979. So Battlestar ended around April, May 1979, and then Buck Rogers premiered on NBC in September of 79.
So this is kind of fascinating. So I'm aware of Buck Rogers. I know what this character is before the show is going to air, because you know, I'm aware of the strip, and I knew he's this classic character. You know, clearly, whatever failures were sort of hanging around Larson's neck with Battlestar, NBC didn't hold against him and said, come over here and do this other show. And so he basically did a modern retake on Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Buck Rogers was frozen in like the late 80s, 87 or something like that.
1987, Captain NASA, William Buck Rogers, last of NASA's deep space probes.
Captain William Buck Rogers, he goes into space and all hell breaks loose. But it was in its design, and there were some good designs with some of the ships and things.
Well, yeah, they were actually his those ships were rejected Viper designs for Battlestar Galactica.
Oh.
There was a lot of recycling. I mean, well, even the tunnel sequence, you know.
The tunnel sequence was recycled.
Yeah.
But again, it was one of those things that showed in the theater before or at the same time as when it aired on television. I remember seeing it in the theater as well, but I don't remember if I saw it on TV first. And the theatrical, as we have said before and everyone knows, there's a opening title sequence that tried to be very James Bond-esque.
Yes.
With a theme song and a guy singing it and girls in, you know, tinfoil bikinis. So basically the thing I just talked about was Star Wars that didn't have, you know, tinfoil and disco and everything else. Everything Buck Rogers did that. Everything in every avenue for Buck Rogers did what everyone else rejected, and it's incredibly dated in so many ways.
But it's also you know, it's a bit tongue in cheek. It's not taking itself real seriously.
No, it's very campy.
And you know, it's kind of fun that way because there's lots of little things. Like, you watch it now and you realize they were in on the joke. And with some of the stuff that they do is, you know, Buck Rogers will be walking in an airport and you'll hear, Captain Christopher Pike, you have a call on the courtesy phone.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, look at that. They threw a little Star Trek joke in there.
Yes.
Or, you know, they have character names that are, you know, homages to other things. And I'm afraid I can't quite remember more.
But I think it's safe to say that it is the campiest genre show since the 66 Batman, with its guest stars, with its riffing on current things, with its square-jawed, you know, hero, because it was, you know, pretty two-dimensional. I think of the – do you ever see the Jerry Orbach episode with the band?
Lars Mangross.
Oh, it's genius. It's absolutely genius. Jack Palance is that bad guy in that two-parter. So Buck Rogers is a NASA astronaut.
They actually brought a lot of the Batman villains back to the show. Cesar Romero, Frank Gorshin.
That's right. Julie Newmar.
They were aware of what they were doing.
Well, and it also had, you know, we've talked about the crushes we had on Bad Girl, Princess Aura in the Flash Gordon Filmation cartoon animated series. Something about Bad Girls, because everybody all the guys loved Erin Gray. They loved Wilma Deering.
Yeah.
And by the way, Gil Gerard was our lead. He was a pretty well known television guy before that.
Was he?
He did quite a few series. I mean, I don't know if he was regulars, but he had a fair amount of television work before.
He was kind of like cut from the same Lee Majory cloth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Next to Stephen Collins, one of the farthest back parts I've ever seen on a human. If you look at that part in his hair, it almost goes back to the middle of his skull. It's bizarre. But
still has a full head of hair, that dude.
Still has a full head of hair, and he had some issues several years ago with, you know, some weight issues, but he's looking healthy and good now. But he was the guy, and he didn't bring a lot of gravitas to the part necessarily, but I forget the guy's name who was Dr. Blah Blah, and then you had
Tim wow, Tim. We're not, I'm usually good at this.
Well, Erin Gray played Wilma Deering. Bill Gerard was Buck Rogers. Felix Silla played Tweaky. The voice of Tweaky was Mel Blanc, which I, of course, loved because I love the Warner Brothers stuff.
He sounded basically like Yosemite Sam.
Yes, but it was totally played for laughs. And I know we've said this before in the sci-fi, in the wake of Star Wars sci-fi episode, how the design of Tweaky made it to television, I will never understand. I can't believe if you put that together on paper – if you designed that on paper, I can't believe if there were a room of 50 people that not one person raised their hand and said, wait a second, is anybody seeing what I'm...
Maybe they're all afraid to.
Are any of you guys seeing what I'm... Because I know what I see. Does anybody catch this? Which makes me think they were completely in on the joke and knew exactly what they were doing, because it is the most... easily the most phallic robot in the history of robots.
Yeah, you've completely ruined him for me.
Completely ruined him. He was a ridiculous... And of course, every time he showed up, it was like...
Do you remember the Space Cruise one where
silly's going to happen?
Twiggy falls in love with the girl Twiggy.
Yeah, she's
going booty, booty, booty.
Booty, booty, booty.
Yeah.
Have, like, sort of a Brooklyn accent too or something?
You know what? You know what's funny is I still crack those episodes out a lot. But I don't think – and I will watch the more ridiculous Gary Coleman ones. But yeah, I haven't seen that one in a while, so I can't remember.
Well, I have to tell you, back to the cast, and this will get to something that happened to me, you know, 10 years ago or whatever it was in L.A. The woman who played Princess Ardala was called
Pamela Hensley?
Pamela Hensley was on the tip of my tongue.
She was in the Doc Savage movie, too.
And after this, she was in Matt Houston.
That's right.
Matt Houston's right-hand man.
CJ.
CJ.
Yeah, I have a friend who used to do an amazing Lee Horsley impression. So
I'd love to hear that. Right. She was gorgeous and dirty and nasty and really was after Buck in kind of a sad, obsessive way that you'd run from if she were real. But she was really filthy. And there was a time about 10 years ago or so, I went with a buddy of mine at the Egyptian in Hollywood. They were showing the 2-hour theatrical, you know, version. And afterwards, there was a Q&A, I forget who hosted it, with Larson, the costume designer, and Aaron Gray were all there to talk about their experiences and stuff. This costume designer, the stories he told about Pamela Hensley sounded like the most filthy actress in Hollywood at the time. The stuff that she would just, you know, the outfits that she wanted to wear, she didn't wear underneath the outfits, how she was very cavalier about herself and everything. But she was a pretty racy character for the time. And it was very – I remember watching it as a kid, and I watched it every single freaking week because, you know, it was sci-fi and it was, you know, it was the closest – you know, but we didn't have anything else. It's like you had to watch this every week. I remember feeling kind of dirty in a way that Battlestar Galactica didn't make me feel. It was adult and very 70s kind of swinging in a way. Like there's a lot of massage and hot tubs and, you know, hot pan, like a lot of innuendo that was very 70s. You know,
there's a lot of jiggle jiggle on the show,
there's
too.
There's a lot of jiggle jiggle. It's
you know, there's an episode with Marky Post called, I think, Plot to Kill a City. And she's in a really nice outfit.
Oh, Jamie and Lee Curtis, too. Wasn't she in one?
Jamie Lee Curtis is in the episode, I think it's Escape from, it's a prison episode. Planet of the Slave Girls. It's a good episode, actually. It takes place in a prison and then there's a manhunt. It's one of the better shows.
And also, let's not forget Kane. Killer Kane. It was called Killer Kane.
He was Killer Kane, but I think he just was Kane. He was Henry Silva in the movie.
Yes,
Michael and Sarah.
Michael and Sarah. That's right. So Henry Silva.
I preferred Henry Silva.
I did too. But Michael and Sarah, his little claim to fame. He just passed away not long ago. He was the voice of Mr. Freeze.
Mr. Freeze, yeah. And he was married to Barbara Eden for a long time.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, their son, I think their son passed away in the 90s, as I recall.
I did not know that. So yeah, so he was in it. Tiger Man was one of the bad guys, one of the heavies. It was in a lot of the episodes. He was played by Hardboiled Haggerty. Wasn't that his name?
I don't know.
I think his name was Hardboiled Haggerty. Again, imagine the important dates and times and experiences in my brain that are gone.
You know that guy's name.
Yeah. I know Hardboiled.
I remember Panther Man. For some reason, they couldn't get Tiger Man.
Tiger Man had dysentery that week.
Yeah.
So they got Panther Man, and after that, they had Sloth Man. But
no,
he was,
I don't think they had Sloth Man.
He was very slow.
You made that up.
Incredibly slow henchman. So they went with Panther Man. So I'm watching the show religiously. It's kind of making me feel dirty because there's adult stuff in it. I remember one thing specifically. Buck is in a hot tub, and some chick comes in. Or he sneaks out the window or something. But when he's in the hot tub, he's singing Strangers in the Night.
Yeah.
And I picked up on it. And so the next morning, I remember kind of singing this, thinking I was cool. And I was saying Strangers in the Night, exchanging glasses.
Yeah.
In my brain, I'm imagining people at a party like wearing glasses or sunglasses and exchanging them at the party. Like,
is that what you thought grown-ups did?
That's what I thought they did. And I remember singing it out loud. And my brother Jack just pouncing on it.
Older brothers are just kings of that.
Gave me no end of shit for singing that. But luckily, like everything else in our childhood that came out as a movie or TV series, boom, you go to the store and there's merchandise.
And again, the licensing guy for Buck Rogers did a fantastic job. And I've actually I've interviewed at length the vice president of merchandise and design, research and design at the time of Mego, who had the license for the action figures. And he said that Buck Rogers sold really, really well because it connected so well with kids. And Mego did a fantastic line of action figures based on the movie. And unfortunately, you know, they made figures of kids, characters that really don't have big parts in the movie, like Draco. But for the most part, you know, the Draconians, Ardala, Kane, and Tiger Man appeared in several episodes of the show, so it kind of made sense. And they made an unprecedented amount of vehicles, like Buck's Viper, the Draconian Starfighter, a laser scope fighter that was kind of an add-on, and a beautiful, like, I love this toy, the Land Rover, which is...
Yeah, is that the one that had, like lobster claws on it?
No, it's an actual. Mego did try to pad out the Buck Rogers line by repackaging some Micronauts and Star Trek toys. Okay. Like, they had the Micronaut City, and they called that New Chicago, and they took the Star Trek 8-inch playset called Mission to Gamma 6, and they repainted it for a catalog and said Draconian Fortress. None of that stuff got made. But they did get one through. They took a big Micronaut vehicle with lobster claws. I know the one you're talking about now. And
right?
They repackaged it as the Buck Rogers Star Searcher.
That's it.
Yeah, and it is just a Micronauts toy in a new box. But they have a beautiful drawing of Buck Rogers. I have been looking for that for years for my collection, but I refuse to pay $300-$400 for it because it isn't really a Buck Rogers toy, you know.
Let's go back to the Mego thing here, because I remember those are really great toys. Those are great action figures. They had loads of articulation. It's weird how you divvy up it's weird how you divide up the Mego stuff and the choices that they made, because around the same time you've got the Black Hole. Mm-hmm. Which they made the same way, you know, loads of articulation, the rubber band, you know, torso thing. And then you get Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was 5 points of articulation and pretty basic. They're all kind of sculpted the same way. None of them have pupils. But I remember, and I knew what Mego stuff was as a kid. Like, I knew, I recognized the stuff. They did stuff. Part of me kind of goes, that's beautiful, and part of me goes, what were you thinking? When they did the card art on the cards for Motion Picture, Black Hole, and Buck Rogers, it's all the same card art on the front, and besides the character in the bubble and a tiny little, you know, version of the name above it, it was hard to know which was which. And some of them looked very similar. Some of those characters looked very similar because they weren't very distinguished in the facial department.
Yeah, I would say that the Star Trek and the Black Hole are especially kind of drab, the Black Hole being very drab. And then the Buck Rogers card art looks great because the poster's nice.
Poster's beautiful. It's great. I just remember as a kid thinking, sometimes these are hard to find characters, or like it's not helping that they're so kind of bland or one note. But also, and I just, you know, just as a kid, the standard for everything became, you know, the 3 3/4 inch figure with a couple of accessories, or at least one accessory. And I was so hugely disappointed in the Buck Rogers figures that didn't come with an accessory or a gun.
Well, their guns were molded in their holster for some odd reason. Holster.
The Black Hole figures didn't come with them. The Star Trek figures didn't come with anything. The 12-inch figures, correct me if I'm wrong, but they did 12-inch for Buck Rogers, and he's got a gun that, you know, goes in the holster, right?
The Buck Rogers 12-inch are beautiful.
They're great. They're great. And
they may be the nicest 12-inch figures that Mego made, and it's weird, you know.
Did they do a tweaky that was a wind up that walked in that
race? And they were going to do that for Black Hole. It was only released in Europe, but they actually launched these 12 inch Black Hole figures, no robots, so they were a dog.
Yeah. It's just like you've got the blandest, no offense, but the blandest actors in the blandest wardrobes you could possibly imagine in these 12. I can't believe any of them sold. Because they didn't come with anything. They didn't come with versions of the awesome gun in the Black Hole, did they?
Well, no, because there's rumor that Disney didn't want that.
Come on.
Yeah, that there was a no gun policy. I don't know how they snuck that by on the Sentry robot and Star figures, but on Buck Rogers, there was no such policy. The figures have guns molded. I remember thinking that was chintzy as a kid, but I usually lost guns in the heating vent by 30 seconds anyways.
I never lost. To this day, I have every single – you look at my Star Wars figures, and they look like they came right out of the packaging 35 years ago.
Mine
like, I never
do
lost
too, actually, but the weapons were all lost.
No, never lost anything. But so Mego's got the kind of the master license with vehicles and figures and such. There's also lots of rack toys. There's also, correct me if I'm wrong, HG Toys, which is doing things like the Army Guy type playset with the mat. I'll let you talk about this in 1 second. But there was also HG, I think, which I believe in the UK was Thomas Salter Toys. They would recycle the stuff as Thomas Salter Toys in the UK, I think. They did a set that I got as a kid, which was the white helmet that had a little flip down microphone for you to talk into, a gun which looked kind of like the gun in the show, but it was basically like a mini machine gun when you pulled the trigger. The belt, there was a white belt with the Buck Rogers on the buckle in case he ever lost it. It had his name on it. So he could claim it. A walkie-talkie. And also, unless I'm getting this mixed up with a couple different sets, there was also a Tweaky, which they sold individually, which I have in the individual box. I tracked it down years later. That is a cheap – and I'm not trying to be mean, but it was like cheap plastic, silver shiny, not non-posable figure of Tweaky that you put two, like AA batteries in the back. And when you pressed a button on his chest – The Dr. Theopolis on his chest lit up, and it was a little dial that made change. You could change different colors, and you had a Morse code thing on the back. So it was like a Morse code clicker or something. And then, of course, Remco made a famous Buck Rogers utility belt, which recycled just about everything in there. I think was recycled from another utility belt, mainly the Star Trek one, I think.
It was less inspired, yeah.
Yeah, was it HG or Fleetwood?
HG had the license, and they did. They went to town on it, to be honest with you. They had that helmet set. They made the little Tweaky you're talking about. They also just made a really nice replica of the Starfighter. And
I've got that.
Yeah.
I tracked that down a few years ago. I think I sent you a picture. On the eBay thing, it's absolutely pristine and mint, and it came with the backing card, not the bubble, but the backing card, and it's a really nice, cheap, plastic replica of the Buck Rogers Starfighter, and it has a little red missile that just pops out. It doesn't come all the way out when you press the button; it just kind of pops out the front. But I have that ship. I have that somewhere.
And HG did make that kind of like vinyl playset thing with the Army Men style stuff and a replica of Buck's ship. And
you loved it, right?
I love that stuff. And any time there's those kind of toy soldiers of characters, I'm in. And they also made a fold up vinyl playset that it just turns into a spaceship with a carrying case, and then when you open it up, it's like a landing pad, and it comes with the figures and ships again. They went to town. A lot of people went to town on Buck Rogers. I think it's the UK company Bendy Toys. They made like a foam Buck and Tweaky.
Here's my Bendy story, and this ties into Buck Rogers. I've told this story before. It's 1980. It's 1980. My first trip to London for like 4 days whatever, with my mom, and I'm looking everywhere for Doctor Who toys. I really thought that by the time I got there that there was going to be like Star Wars, that because there was nothing in America that I would find Doctor Who toys on every street corner. Like you couldn't, and there was nothing. I mean, there was absolutely nothing. I managed – when we got to Madame Tussauds, which I didn't know this before we went to Madame Tussauds, the Wax Museum – came around a corner, and suddenly there's this massive Doctor Who display, and at the front is Tom Baker in the maroon wardrobe from his final season. So it's 80 or 81. I think the final season was just airing or something, and the whole thing kind of tied into his final season. This whole section that you go in was all Doctor Who, wax figures. And when you got to the shop, when you got spit out the other end of the thing, you got to the shop and there was the cardboard sutured Easter egg that came in the cardboard TARDIS box, the chocolate Easter egg. And inside the Easter egg was a book of transfers, rub down transfers. I threw it out. I mean, I lost it years ago, but I managed to save. I mean, I managed to track it down on eBay and got one not long ago. And in the doorway is Peter Davison, which I couldn't figure out. I didn't know who this guy was. And I found a Viewmaster reel. But when we got to Hemley's, I thought we were going to find all kinds of toys. Well, the very top floor, the two things I wanted, I don't know why I didn't push my mom to get these. One was a Kenny Everett Bendy. Kenny Everett, the famous DJ, British DJ, and he had an animated character called Captain Kremen. And it was a 12-inch foam Bendy. And right next to him was Buck Rogers and Tweaky, a little mini Tweaky Bendy. And the Buck had like a cloth outfit. And it was like a hard rubber face, I think, of Gil Gerard. And I was desperate to get these, and I didn't. But what I did get on that trip was the Buck Rogers Corgi.
That's right. The big one or the little one?
I got the big one. I don't know whatever. I have the little one as well. And when you push the lever on the little one, the wings pop out. I don't know whatever happened to the big one. But the big one came with a little army guy of Buck and a little army guy of Tweaky. But what's interesting about this Corgi is that, and you know this, because the front of the ship were two sharp points.
They had to put a bar across, right?
They put a bar across the front of it, which I could never figure out as a kid.
You know what? Until you just started putting that together, I didn't know why they did that either.
Yeah, that's why they did it.
Because the kids wouldn't stab each other in the eyes with it?
Exactly, and they probably could have done a damn good job because they were very sharp. Those points were very sharp. But that's what I did pick up from that trip. And 30-some years later, I mentioned the Kenny Everett Bendy on one of the shows, either this one or Geek Show Herod, I don't remember.
It was Geek Show Herod, I think.
And someone sent me a link and said, oh, my God, there's one on eBay right now. And I got it for like $15 from a guy in Argentina or something. And I have it proudly in the display case. But you know, I mean, it's a foam figure. I don't know how many of the Buck Rogers ones. Someone tracked one down. There's a website where a toy website, and when he writes this article, he has this massive debate about whether he should break the cellophane on it and open it up and actually, you know, look at it or leave it as is. And he decides to open it up. He's got these great pictures of the Buck and Tweaky. It's a really strange thing that was only available in the UK.
Yeah, I don't know how durable foam rubber action figures would be.
They're not, because there are bits of the Kenny Everett one where the wire is kind of poking out the foam. Yeah. It's a miracle that it's held together as well as it has. Also, we should mention one of the single worst coloring books in the history of coloring books.
It is really terrible.
For Buck Rogers. And please, I urge everyone listening to go to Plaid Stallions and look at Coloring Book Theater, and please examine the one that you wrote. It's your captions are brilliant.
When you got that kind of gold, it's easy.
You got that kind of gold, it's not like it was that difficult, but it was brilliant stuff that you wrote. But it's the worst. It's like they gave a secretary a pen and said, you know, draw the show. You've never seen the show, but please draw it.
Please draw it, and please make sure that you make it look like Buck is masturbating in at least one page.
Yeah, if you can make it look as filthy as possible,
yeah,
kids, that would be great.
Was there anyone behind the wheel? You know, and that, I think that's why I love coloring books, is nobody gave a crap. And, you know, it's
well, what's remarkable about it, especially the stuff that you do, the stuff that you point out on Plaid Stallions in the Color Book Theater, is like I did a couple of articles. I did one for one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark coloring books, and one for the animated Flash Gordon, and they're really nice. I mean, the artwork in them is fantastic. The Flash Gordon one is one of the best coloring books. The art is great. The activities are fun. Looks just like their TV counterparts. And then the other end of the spectrum, because they must have just been so disposable. The idea being these are 50 cents. Kids are going to take them home, destroy them, you know, use the wrong crayons, not stay in the lines or whatever. So let's just get it out as quick as we can. The majority of them are just awful. Like they just...
The first Kenner Star Wars ones, it's either like you know, they came to them on a Thursday and said, we need to get something to the press tomorrow.
Yes.
Because some of the pictures look really great, and then others, it's like, did you have a ruler? You know, just... and it, there's no consistency to them. And I know we're talking about coloring books, but damn it, I
love that stuff. But see, yeah. What's great about we're totally digressing here. But what's great about the Star Wars stuff is, I'm really attracted to that early stuff because it's so they didn't know what this thing was. They didn't know the longevity it was going to have. They kind of knew who Darth Vader was, but then there was artistic license, you know, with so many of the other creatures or kin, you know, like it just didn't quite. You could tell they had certain reference photos, and then they let their imagination go crazy with the rest of it. So all that stuff that's like 77, 78, the dip dots, the Kenner dip dots painting set that they did for Star Wars is one of the very earliest bits of Star Wars merchandise. And the artwork is just – it's bizarre and kind of mind-blowing. What kills me, if you look at some of the stuff, like there's a book called, you know, 1001 – collectibles or something, and it's like a Steven Sansweet book about Star Wars collectibles. There's stuff in there from like 80-81 when the movie's already been out and we're on to Empire now. There's stuff from like Australia and Canada that gets the design so wrong for Vader and like the Stormtrooper that you just go, I don't know how you could avoid pictures of these characters. How could you not – you could throw a rock and find a picture of a Stormtrooper and just make a costume. But they put weird scuba gear on it and stuff. Just really strange stuff. I'm kind of fascinated by that stuff. But so Buck Rogers, it runs for a
it runs for one solid year and then comes back retooled as a mid-season replacement. And I remember when it came back because I was having a slumber party and we were going between Mr. Merlin and Buck Rogers. I couldn't figure out what I wanted to watch. And they retooled the show. And again, it's weird. Like, you know, Space 1999, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, they all had different second seasons. And as a kid, they were back and better than ever. And now as I've grown up, it's sort of like, no, the first season's way better. But, you know, like to my, you know, 9 or 10 year old mind, it was the other way around.
Well, something kind of bizarre happened to Buck Rogers because what they did, again, similar to Battlestar in a way, they wanted to salvage the show. The ratings were okay. There was a strike, I think, that went on, which delayed that second season. I think the second season didn't hit till like 81 or something.
Yeah, and Gil Gerard also was not happy.
He was very vocal about it because they lost an executive producer, and this other guy they got, he said, you know, couldn't direct traffic and changed the whole thing. So you had this initial thing, which was, you know, Buck Rogers 25th century, he's on Earth, all this culture shock and stuff, and suddenly they're on a spaceship. Called the Searcher, and they're traveling. I don't know what they're looking for. If they're like now they're like the Enterprise or something. They lost part of the main cast. Erin Gray's still on, but she's been reduced. She was this strong female character that was like, you know, a colonel, basically. Obviously, Colonel William Deering, and she's given nothing to do. They made her into like an airline stewardess in this new show.
Oh yeah, she was really the tragedy of that second season because she was such a nicely fleshed out character in the first season and they had this beautiful back and forth and then they added their Maya, which was Hawk, who is a fan favorite. And, you know, I like Tom Christopher in the role and I think he's great, but it was sort of like she just became the third wheel in that.
Yeah. She had nothing to do in the show. And if it was as camp as Christmas in that first season, the second season was mental. I mean, there's one with a bunch of dwarfs that is so...
I just watched that one. I forget the name of the episode. It's like Zinnaquatch or something.
It's like Zigzag and the Little People or some shit.
Oh, it is so embarrassing.
It's so
if you're bad. if you're and I'll use little person actor, you must. Like, that must have been hell to do that role.
It was embarrassing for little people when it was on.
Yeah, now, and the guy from Bad Santa is like the star of that. And it's like, how did
black
he...
Guy?
Yeah, he's...
No.
Yes, he is the one they all pick on. And it's like, he must have just been like, maybe I should rethink this acting thing. you know.
Well, there were two episodes. I think these are both that second season. One was the space vampire. To this day,
that's the first season.
People of our age talk about that like it
the
is
Vorlon.
Nightmares. I don't know why, because it was so funny, but it was kind of spooky. There's another one where he turns into like a Minotaur or something.
The Minotaur. I remember exactly where I was when I watched that. I was at a furniture store waiting for my parents to stop haggling.
A lot of your stories.
I've got one or two of me in a furniture store watching TV.
But a lot of your stories are like, I remember I saw that episode when I was at the electronics store with my dad. Look, like you see a lot of this iconic stuff you remember, you're watching on someone else's television at a retail store.
Well, you know why I remember it? It's because the same reason, if you want to remember that you locked your front door, they say turn around three times when you do it. Because then you remember the unusual circumstance of doing that.
They do?
Yeah.
Who says that?
They.
Wait, so when you lock your front door, you're supposed to turn around three times every time you do it?
Or do a jumping jack or something, and then you'll go, did I lock my front door? Oh, yeah, I did that stupid jumping jack. Yeah.
Punch yourself in the face every time you lock the door.
Hey, don't steal my methods. but what I was trying to say is that's why I remember that. And I also remember that because I just – my parents, before we went to the store, this ties back into Buck Rogers and all that, we went to Kmart. And Kmart had a 9-foot section full of second series Star Trek aliens and second series Mego black hole figures, like the humanoid old Bob Star. And they were a buck. They were blowing them out.
Oh, my God.
So I remember the day I got my humanoid. Like, I bought the humanoid. I bought Ernest Borgnine. My parents were like, yeah, here's $10. Go nuts.
Wow.
And I was just sitting on the floor of the Bad Boy or the Brick or whatever it was, watching Buck Rogers and playing with these figures.
That's up in your collective consciousness in one of those rooms. That like one of your happiest moments.
Oh, that's a good day. Yeah.
Like throw in a soft pretzel with cheese and an orange Julius and forget it. You could have died that day.
I'd trade the soft pretzel for a fern tart, but yeah.
There you go. A fern tart and every box would have been ticked off. You didn't even need girls then because you still were kind of.
I didn't know what to do with them.
Wouldn't have known what to do with them. But that's what's interesting. Like this show tied back into Doctor Who in the UK a little bit, and it probably hit you guys a little bit later, was one of those primetime threats to Doctor Who in Great Britain. Because in 81, it was a fresh show over there.
Yeah.
And it was, compared to Doctor Who, it was like, Reservoir Dogs versus, Avatar. Like it was there was no budget to Doctor Who, and Buck Rogers seemed like the big fat American show with lots of money and everything. So it was a big show over in the UK. And it also, there were quite a few, well, there was the Whitman comic, I think, which ties into Black Hole. They both had a Whitman comic. Gold Key.
Yeah.
There were paperbacks that were similar to some one-off paperbacks for Battlestar Galactica, where they sort of had standalone stories.
And I think the Buck Rogers books actually were very well regarded because whoever wrote them sort of like that futuristic Man from U.N.C.L.E., but there was a little less of the cheese in there.
Wasn't there a book called Buck Rogers, That Man on Beta?
That's right, and that's where I kind of think they were going for a little bit more of Our Man Flint type deal.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So you had those, but also, we've talked about this before, the magazine in the U.K. called Look In.
Yep. Did a weekly Buck Rogers strip.
Did a weekly Buck Rogers
strip. And a Battlestar strip as well.
And a Battlestar strip. And the artwork on the majority of those strips, except for like the Benny Hill one, which is god-awful. But a lot of those, sci-fi-ish strips, the artwork and look-in is really good.
Yeah. And Gold Key didn't go into Buck's second season. And I don't – Marvel had the Battlestar license. And as I recall – the art was pretty crude. Like they didn't put their A game on it, and I don't know how long the Marvel Battlestar Galactica comic lasted, but
I remember that. That was one of those obsessive, books that I kind of would pick that up too.
I bought a few.
The other thing about season two, which we cannot avoid talking about, if you thought the Tweaky was just too serious for you as far as robots went in sci-fi shows, then NBC gave you what was he called? The Crichton?
Crichton.
Crichton. NBC gave you Crichton, which was the sorry, Brian, just a second.
He's having an issue.
Yeah. It's that, you know how dogs do that backward sneeze thing?
Is that? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's Bowie doing that backward sneeze, and he sounds like a warthog. Are you done? Are you done? You done? Okay, good. Sorry. Let me start over. So the other thing that season two did for Buck Rogers that we cannot avoid talking about. If you thought that Tweaky was a little too serious as far as robots went and sci-fi, then your prayers were answered because NBC gave you the worst television robot in history called Crichton, which was the design was he looked like they took a Klingon cruiser from the original Star Trek, popped its front off, gave him that head. And just this ridiculous body that the neck kept extending on. He was always bitching at Tweaky, and he just
he was kind of like a robot Tony Randall.
Yeah, or like a robot Dr. Smith kind. He just was a really campy, bitchy robot.
Yeah, he always didn't like humans or something.
And he always kind of put his hands on his hips. Now here we go again.
Yeah, I as a kid I thought he looked really fantastic. But as an adult, you watch him and you're like, he's basically a big corkscrew.
Well, they also gave us that other commander who wasn't no offense to anybody in the future, but he wasn't exactly the toughest, manliest ship commander we ever had. Whoever the guy was that was the commander
he was Commander Ivan Asimov.
And no, he was.
Yes, he was.
Ivan he was Asimov,
a direct descendant of Isaac Asimov, and I'm sure you know he Isaac Asimov was a real big Buck Rogers fan.
Well, the best thing about besides Crichton, the best thing about that campy second season is Wilfred Hyde White, who plays
Dr. Reed Cue Cards.
Reading cue cards, and you can't watch this without – it's so painfully obvious that he's reading everything, and he never looked at a script, and he's reading
everything.
He looked
like such a nice man, though.
He seemed like a nice man, but his son – you know who his son is?
Yeah, his son. We talked about this before. His son is
Alex Hyde White.
Ill-fated Reed Richards.
Reed Richards in the famous Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
The Searcher – what's –
he also would have been in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in the flashback sequence with River Phoenix when he comes in to talk to his father. Sean Connery's voice is dubbed in, but he was supposed to be the on-screen younger Sean Connery in Last Crusade.
Shoulda, woulda, coulda. Now the searcher uniforms are also background village people. Type-looking things. I always felt that the whole searcher concept was very thrown together. And, you know, like the command center just looks like they took a whole bunch of recycle props and shoved them and said, this fits, there we go, we're done.
Well, you know who else is in the background as a secondary character? Is Dennis Haysbert. Dennis Haysbert is in that second season of Buck Rogers. As a semi-regular on the ship. He must have been 12. I don't know how old he is now, but he's a household name now. But that was one of the first things he did.
And what was I going to say? The episodes, they tried to be serious science fiction, but they were like, you know, written by a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, there's an episode where Mark Leonard appears, and he's an old flame of Aaron Gray, which is which is really believable, and he's an alien whose head can come off, and he's you know a secret, and you've got Buck turning into a centaur, and you've got the you know the mark of the Goral, is that what it is? They're all trying to be these kind of deeply philosophical episodes, but whether it's the presentation or the script, but they just a lot of them don't really work, you know. And then they even kind of rip off Space 1999 with this episode where only Buck can see that these people that are supposed to be their friends are
are
enemies. And that was a two-parter on Space 1999 called Bringers of Wonder. But it's the exact same story on Buck Rogers. I think it's called Mark of the Sauron or something like that.
I kind of remember that. I just remember it, even as a kid, starting to think that it was getting really campy and really – like I couldn't wait for it to come back.
Yeah.
And I knew that it was getting silly beyond – recognition and tried to, it was trying to kind of be, you know, at times it seemed like it was trying to be a serious, you know, sci-fi show, but it just, it couldn't help being, you know, ridiculous. And remember, there was also an episode of the first season with Gary Coleman.
There's two episodes,
that's right. He becomes, I mean, that tells you what a big star he was, but like that crossover thing was god awful.
He kind of wrote himself into that too.
Did he?
Yeah, he was a big fan and he was such a big star on NBC that they said, all right, we'll get you in there. That's the story I've heard anyway.
And did he say what you're talking about? Like when?
I don't remember.
It was that. And then, you know, of course, by the time the second season came around, there was very little that I could find, you know, merchandise-wise
it was all basically a sell-down. Just like Battlestar Galactica 80 was very good for all the Galactica merchandise to sell down.
Yeah. Yeah,
we didn't get a Hawk action figure. We didn't get a Viper bikes for our figures or any of that stuff because it was over, Johnny. And
well, on that note, I should say, because it's self-serving if I mention it, and it's kind of silly if I don't because it's so obvious. But one of the things that, you know, was on a short list, I had like two short lists of licenses to go after someday. In fact, I remember talking to you about this once. I came from the licensing show in Vegas initially and talked to you about what you thought about $6 Million Man and or Battlestar Galactica in the retro 8-inch figure range.
Uh-huh.
And we got both. And, you know, continuing to make a substantial amount of merchandise for both of those licenses. But for Battlestar, it was like we can finally do some of these characters that never got to be made. You know, back in the day, we did a repro of the original Lunchbox that we put a couple of, you know, exclusive figures in for Comic-Con. One of the things we did that I'm proudest of are the talking Cylon bobbleheads,
mm-hmm.
a regular silver version and then a gold Commander version. And the sound is fantastic. And there's like three quotes and laser blasts and stuff. Just all kinds of fun stuff, you know, snow globes and things like that that I've always kind of wanted to do, because I really do have a strong affection for it. And there was something very, very small world cool about being at Comic-Con a couple years ago with Richard Hatch and Dirk Benedict signing our action figures, you know, of each of them. And it's one of those moments that you just, you know, I know I've said this 1,000 times and I know it's not, you know, inventing penicillin or anything, but like when I think about the 8-year-old kid that sat in front of the television in our den with the red and black shag carpeting and just hung on every word of this show, because, you know, you don't understand how any of this stuff is made. You're not sure where it's made or who does it or how it's, you just feel like this is a world that you'll never get to visit on any level. And then suddenly being grown up, getting a license, you know, starting a toy company, getting a license, and standing there at Comic-Con with the toys that you made and the guys that were in this show that you watched as a kid. Very, very surreal experience. Very strange. And kind of, you know, makes you kind of – it chokes you up a bit, because it's like that was that time – I go on about this all the time, but the years between like 76 and like 82, 83 were just bliss. It was before – anything got too complicated or difficult or strenuous or drug fueled or, you know, whatever. I mean, it was just it was our childhoods, and like, what was the worst that was going to happen? You know, like when you rode your bike around the block. Like it was a good time to be a kid, and all this stuff that we ate up. And I was just thinking about this the other day. I don't know what I was talking about with somebody. I was talking about the. I hate to keep using the word disposable, or the way that everything is sort of disposable now, but it's like, you know, you just talked about the Buck Rogers line of action figures and how a lot of the characters, or some of the characters, didn't, you know, if you made him as action figures, you're like, well, shit, that guy appeared in one movie, you know, how good. But that's how far in advance they had to make this stuff.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They couldn't see the entire series. They didn't know where these guys were going to go. And so it was a tricky thing. But, like, when you think about the massive amounts of merchandise that started to come out for these properties because of Star Wars or whatever else came before it, thinking we better get on this because, I mean, trading cards, candy, rack toys, coloring books, toys, bed sheets, calculator, you know, whatever it is. They that was a lot of stuff to come out for these things that ended up only being on for a season or two. And a lot of time and effort was put into them. I mean, I even think about the, and this was just a brief time, but it seemed to be a year of my life with Battlestar Galactica being on cereal boxes, either trading cards or those stickers.
Oh, I got those. Else, yeah.
And one of my prized possessions as a kid, again, not only did I track it down intact, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ago, but I also tracked down a flat cereal box of like Crazy Cow or something that offers it on the back was the Battlestar Galactica Starfighter kit or whatever it was called, where it was a cardboard, it was cardboard, and you made like the cockpit of a Viper with a little handle that you could use to steer the thing. It came with like different mission cards that you slipped into the cockpit panel. It came with a Viper patch and like an iron-on sticker patch, a little Colonial Pilot, you know, handbook, a poster, you know, stickers, all kinds of great stuff in this envelope. I mean, the day that show, I will never forget. I still recall the day that showed up in the mail and just being overwhelmed at getting something in the mail and just all the contents of this envelope that was essentially like $3 to mail away for. And it just seemed like Battlestar Galactica was around for a lot longer than it was. Also, rubdown transfers.
Yeah.
That was a big part of our childhood. Like rubdown, what were they called?
Presto Magic. I don't remember if there was a Battlestar Galactica. There was a Buck Rogers.
Well, there was what they did for Battlestar, unless I'm getting it mixed up with color forms. What they did with Battlestar was there were larger rubdowns, and what you got in the box were cardboard stand-ups. Okay, so like a cardboard stand-up outline of Starbuck. You put the rubdown on top of the cardboard and did the transfer, and then you got like a 4 or 5 inch stand-up figure of Starbuck.
Oh, okay. So that was like, yeah, okay, yeah.
And the rest of the cast.
I had the Marvel Comics version of those. I still have one of those somewhere.
Yeah, it just was. It was a very, very cool time. So we finally got to make. We got the license. I got to make toys, which was very cool because it was a big part of our childhood. And then for Buck Rogers, well, I should preface this. You know, all those light, you know, Battlestar, Buck Rogers, $6 Million Man. We got, you know, all kinds of toys. We never got them in the 8-inch Mego style retro, you know, figure style cloth outfits. You know, Mego type bodies. And so a company called Zika, or Zika, depending on where you're from, got the license for Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, the TV series, and they made a really nice set of figures. They were going to make more. I think everybody wishes that they did. I don't know whatever happened, but they did made a Buck Rogers and a Tiger Man,
yeah,
and
they're really sweet figures. If you can't really get them, I highly recommend them.
Yeah, they're really, really nice, and it fills in that there's something really cool about. For me, standing up, you know, our 8-inch Flash Gordon figure, or Ming, the Buck Rogers Zika figure, and like the you know, our Biff Bang Pow Starbuck or Apollo, like all this stuff we didn't get back then, we're finally, you know, getting in some shape or form. And I'm glad to be part of it. It's cool that we can be part of it and do that.
Yeah.
So there you go. And Glenn Larson, of course, went on to do, after that second season was done, he went on to do
Manimal.
Manhole?
Manimal.
Manimal.
Nightman.
Yeah, Manimal, all kinds of shit. But what he did, but was probably the biggest success, was Knight Rider.
Oh, that, yeah.
That ran for like 4 or 5 seasons, right?
It did, and yeah, that's definitely his biggest hit of the 80s.
I mean, I always hated that show. I never liked it. I never liked the car. I didn't like the guy. I hated it, but that was a big show, and he's still kicking around, you know, doing stuff. And now we've got the word that there's going to be a big screen reboot of the original Battlestar Galactica, and I just hope they keep some of the tone and the design, and they call some of those guys. I mean, I know where Herb Jefferson hangs out every month at the Shrine. They could get these guys. What was the other guy called? Jolly or Sleepy or Dopey?
Oh, you know what? I was just trying to find that before you said it. I think it's Jolly.
I think it's Jolly. And you know what? Every week he got his jollies off on the show.
But
So there is our Battlestar Galactica / Buck Rogers late 70s Glenn Larson tribute episodes. Hope you learned something. I know I did.
I most certainly did.
So that's, you know, we do this every month for free, so you can all learn things.
Learning is fun.
Learning is fundamental.
And next month we'll be doing a whole retrospective of John Ritter in Hero at Large.
Yes, John Ritter and Ann Archer, yes. Hero at Large. And Kevin Bacon, by the way.
Was he in that? I say that because we're having our Mego meet. Is in June. Mego Meet is the Mego convention, and everybody does a this year the theme of it was customize a brick Mantooth figure for our custom auction, and our custom auction goes towards all our bandwidth and expenses for running Mego Museum. And people were doing all these wonderful creative things with brick Mantooth figures, making them into superheroes and wrestlers, and it's just wacky and inspired. You can see it on the Mego Meet Facebook page. And I just got the idea one night of doing him as Captain Avenger.
Wow.
So I'm actually holding it right now. I'm almost ready to show it off. By the time the show's done and on the air, I'll probably have shown off the figure. So,
well,
all right. Well, I think Henry's got the right idea.
Henry's very excited about that.
Yes. He's not a fan. I can't read it.
That's him saying Hero at Large.
Yeah.
You're kidding. Why? All right. He's saying, why have you not done Condor Man yet? That's what he just said.
Well, one thing at a time, Henry.
All right, one thing at a time, pal. You hear that? All right. Well, there we almost got in under the door there. Just Henry had to, he's been waiting to say something the whole episode. So
he's been very good.
So there you go, everybody. Hope you had fun. We did, and we'll do this again very soon.
You'll see you next month.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.